like getting that experience and getting paid for it is really, really beneficial for them. And then, you know, after, you know, they've done that for a little bit, we'll go through and buy a fourplex and they'll do the renovation and kind of manage it. And so we've done that with like about four or five people now. It's been great for us. And I would assume that they would say great for them as well. They have the assurity that, like, you know, we've done this before, we know what we're doing, and they're not going to like lose their shorts. And often, more often than not, that comes out significantly better than everyone thinks.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
AJ Shepard is the co-owner of Uptown Properties. He is also a licensed property manager and contractor in Oregon who started investing in real estate more than 10 years ago. AJ is an active investor and syndicator of multifamily apartments in the Portland area. AJ, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, man. And where are you based out of?
Sam, I'm out of Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. Awesome, man. Hey, I got three questions for you. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show is quickly, can you tell us where'd you start? Can't even tell you my own questions. I ask them every day 1,000 times. We're going to leave that in because I feel like an idiot. That's great. Where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Sure. So it all started probably back in 2007. I was just getting out of college and my dad had been a real estate investor. He'd always told us to buy houses and create passive income. So when I got out of college, I kind of made my way to Portland, Oregon, and I actually bought my first house from my dad and still own it today. So he had a renter kind of like back out on a deal and it came available. I was looking at the time. I'd had another couple contracts actually fall out. And this one just seemed pretty good. So got into it. That's kind of where I started, where I am today. My brother and I, several companies here in Portland, Oregon, associated real estate, contracting, syndication, property management. We're vertically integrated and we are actively looking and buying apartment complexes and adding them to the portfolio to manage. So how did we get from there to here? We started off with one or two houses a year, kind of buy them, fix them up. It was about 4 years after I had bought my first house when we got up to the point where we're like, hey, why don't we start a property management company, start getting some additional income and help qualify for more financing. So we started a property management company and the contract company in 2011. And then we opened up brokerage services to sell and buy real estate for other people, I think in like 2017, 2018. And then it was just a couple of years ago, we had purchased an eightplex ourselves and renovated it and kind of came into that like aha moment of commercial financing. So once you start getting into lending that's over $1 million, the financing rates become a lot better and you're not limited by the amount of loans that you can get and the deal is underwritten as opposed to the person that's buying it is underwritten, like your global cash flows being underwritten. But it's mostly the deal. And that kind of commercial financing was like the aha moment of like, we should do just bigger deals. So we've done, I think, 4 syndications since that point. We kind of mocked up that 8 unit as though it was a syndication for us so that we could present to investors and present to people and be like, hey, if we were going to do something, it would look like this. Is that something that you would be interested in? And having that talking piece is really kind of what gave us that next step to get into syndication.
Wow, man, that's a lot of moving pieces. And I love just the high level rundown of just how your business has evolved. I think it's one of those things where you know, you see a finished product today, right? And you go, oh, or at least what is the version of today's finished product? And you go, oh, that's really cool. But you don't really see all the intermediate steps, you know, that it took someone to get there. I was having breakfast with a gentleman last week and he goes, we spent, you know, if you picture a U, he said, we spent the better part of 20 years in the bottom of that channel, you know, just slogging our way out. And he goes, and it wasn't until the last 2 or 3 years that we really start to, you know, have a meteoric rise in our business, you know? So I think it's just interesting to hear those developments. So you were doing single family, you got into some eightplexes, you know, you did a property management company, opened a brokerage. And when you say commercial financing, did you guys open a financing company as well?
No, that was just us procuring financing. And it was the threshold of like going from residential mortgages to commercial mortgages and commercial lending. It just kind of the doors I wouldn't say like the heavens opened up and like sun came down, but I mean, it was certainly some different light that we experienced, which is we were very happy about.
Right. Yeah. It's amazing that getting a $10 million loan is easier than say a $700,000 loan.
Yeah.
Like this should be.
The worst loans to get are the like 5 or 6 units that are like under 1.4 million. If that rate, not the rate, but the principal amount, if it's less than a million, like it is the hardest thing to find, because the residential guys can't touch it because it's not 4 or less units. And then, you know, the big banks are like, well, that's not worth my time. And so it's the missing middle.
Yes, I can commiserate with that statement. I've had a project, you know, that falls in that $1.8 million range and we're getting it figured out, man. But what a nightmare it's been. I'm like, I'm never doing this again. Like there's going to be another zero at the end of this or a couple more, you know, before I ever touch something this small again, because it's been a nightmare. Talk to us, you know, about, you know, why you guys have gone to the commercial side of things outside of lending. I mean, if you've got a property management company, if you guys are vertically integrated, you can buy properties really at will, you know, things are going along. Why the switch?
We still do the 1 to 4 units. Actually, one really cool thing is we've partnered with some of our brokers. So they're kind of running the projects and we're acting as like the knowledge base and financers on them. So we still do those type of units, but my brother and I just focus our time on the larger units. You know, the larger units come with their, you know, it's bigger sums of money. It's more doors at a time. Like there's just advantages of the economy of scale, and it's worth our time more to work on those than it is the smaller stuff. But we also want to see like our company and our employees like come up and build their own wealth and work towards, you know, doing kind of what we do.
That's fantastic. I love that. Yeah, because I think that's a missing link in the real estate space, especially if you're just a broker or just an affiliate broker. Like usually you're not out there actually doing the investing. So how are you educating and bringing up your brokers in that sense?
Yeah, I mean, most of them come on as doing like a leasing agent job or kind of like performing some sort of work within the property management company. It's a great experience to really see what the ins and outs of like down and dirty investing really needs to take place. You know, it's not fun kicking bad tenants out. It's not fun, you know, getting stuff ready for renovation, dealing with contractors, but like getting that experience and getting paid for it is really, really beneficial for them. And then, you know, after, you know, they've done that for a little bit, we'll go through and buy a fourplex and they'll do the renovation and kind of manage it. And so we've done that with like about four or five people now. It's been great for us. And I would assume that they would say great for them as well. They have the assurity that like, you know, we've done this before, we know what we're doing, and they're not going to like lose their shorts. And often, more often than not, that comes out significantly better than everyone thinks. So.
Right. That's awesome. What have been some of the keys to your growth? I mean, handling all these different companies, that's a lot to manage. How have you done that in a way that makes sense without taking on too much at once?
It is definitely getting good at delegating, getting people to work with you and partner with you and work for you. There's no way that I could just do it all by myself. My brother and I have a great relationship, which is awesome. We're about cresting about 25 employees now. One of our little secrets is we have hired a ton of assistants from overseas. We use virtual assistants and utilize technology a lot more than I want to say some of older guys or some other companies that I know of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The delegating, that's certainly important. You know, one of the things that, you know, it's kind of an older school of thought was developing an entire training manual. And I'm hearing that's kind of going by the wayside just because no one's going to take the time to read a training manual. How have you guys gotten around that?
So, I mean, we're on kind of a video recording software here, Zoom. We often do, instead of doing manuals, we do videos. And so we'll actually just like share our screen on this, talk through what we're doing. And then we're able to send that over to our VAs. And then they're able to refer to it like over and over again if they should need to. We also use some automation software that instead of like, you know, a how-to manual or even a written checklist, like what it does is it has the checklist like programmed in. And so it creates a task list. This is much like a CRM. And so every day they come in and their task list has either like populated because of what someone else has done. And then they just go through and like keep doing those tasks.
Do you mind sharing with our listeners that resource that you use to create those tasks and make sure that that stays front of mind?
Sure, sure. I mean, it's specific to the property management field, but it's called Lead Simple. You know, other people have used like, so Trello, Asana, Process Street are kind of like some other technologies that maybe do that. HubSpot is pretty super expensive. So if you can afford that, then great. But that's the kind of like process flow and process management within business that you can use. And Lead Simple has been great for us. They're newer at it, but I've used them for our business development for 4 or 5 years. And it just kind of made sense to move our operations into that.
That's cool. Very cool. Thanks for taking the time to share some of that insight into your business. Let's talk a little bit about where you guys invest. Are you strictly in the Portland area?
We are. So we actually stay in a segment of the Portland area. We try to stay in the Southwest and surrounding cities. Portland is like a metro area of about 800,000 or 900,000 people. And then it has multiple cities surrounding it, such as like Tualatin, Tigard, Beaverton, Hillsboro, Forest Grove, Vancouver, Washington, Gresham. We try to stay away from North and East and truly try to stay in the South and West, keeping it close to our office. Investing allows for us to really sharpen the pencil on our management prices and just on rents. Really knowing that kind of like niche area really well has really been beneficial for us. Like we might be able to pay a little bit more than the next guy just because we know exactly what everything is going to cost and what sort of revenues we're going to get. So we feel like we're super competitive in this market. And most people have probably heard about Portland and Oregon. We're like the first state to pass rent control. And we have a lot of laws that are very confusing. More often than not, like you're going to hear larger investors be like, well, I don't want to go to Oregon. That sounds too complicated. So what it's done is that's actually driven out some of the market. So there's actually less competition because it's more convoluted and more complex.
How have you guys found a way to navigate that?
I mean, we've been in this business for 15 years, day in and day out, and a full-time job. We're plugged into networks. We have the Rental Housing Alliance, Multifamily Northwest, NARPM, National Association of Residential Property Managers. Like, it's the management that really probably sets us apart from the rest. We're just familiar with the laws. We know all the lawyers here in town that practice landlord law. So we're just, you know, when you've been in this business for that long, like you just create those relationships, and probably seeking out in a new market to create those types of relationships as soon as possible will be quite beneficial.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so. It's interesting that you say that. I mean, it would be a natural consequence. I would think, yes, that it does drive out competition just because, I mean, you get guys like me that, you know, I hear the negative news and I go, well, why would you invest in Portland, right?
Why even look there, right?
Right, why even look there? Meanwhile, in the background, you're clapping your hands going, yeah, you just keep thinking that, buddy. That's great. That's hysterical. How would you recommend, you know, I know you said getting to know lawyers, attorneys, finding those people if you're entering a new market. What's a good way to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I am not familiar investing like out of state. Like we have really focused in this area, but I know that like NARPM has chapters all over. There's your local real estate agency and you know, finding out who's on those boards. Finding out if there's forms in the states, like most states will have like standard forms and standard leases for property management, and finding out what attorney writes those forms is probably a really good way to find out who's in the business. A lot of attorneys will just, I mean, will mostly, you know, our general practice and I'll kind of try to do everything, but it's really important to try to find the ones that like practice in the landlord tenant law. There's a service here, it's called Landlord Solutions, and they literally just do large evictions, like mass evictions. And so they've got like a streamlined process, and pretty much all the property management companies use that service. It's not really open to a non-professional. The other thing you might think about too is like getting a professional license in that state. like a broker's license or a property management license. Like, it's good information. It's probably going to be state specific. And in the grand scheme of things, it's a drop in the bucket for price. Like, I think the one in Oregon here is like $1,000 all said and done. And like, in the grand scheme of things, like, it's just not that much money for like the knowledge and the specific kind of like education that you'll get within that area.
I mean, it's really smart. I've never thought about looking up who writes those forms, because you're right. You know, I do have my license here in Tennessee, and you're like, gosh, I don't even think it was $1,000. It was an online 90-hour course, and I think it took me 35 hours to actually do it online, and maybe $750. Like, oh, okay. This is not rocket science. Of course, your ongoing fees, you know, that up, still it's inconsequential. So that's a really good point, but I never thought about who actually writes those forms. I mean, I know that there's attorneys here because they're always changing. I mean, they gotta stay in business somehow. So they're always changing the forms every 3-4 months. Oh, new updated version of these forms, but who's writing that? And find those people and reach out to them. That's brilliant. Let's shift gears here a little bit and go back to the syndication side of things. What has that process been like for you guys? I mean, you know, I would imagine that you've already got kind of a nice, you know, pool of investors that you work alongside of, but what's it been like growing that business, and how do you see it moving forward?
Growing that business has been great. You know, we've been connecting with brokers here in the area. That's been really important for deal flow. We have had some investors from our property management kind of business, but really it's been connecting with people on Bigger Pockets. It's doing podcasts like this. We run our own podcast, the Westside Investors Network, and, you know, getting out and finding those people that are interested in investing in real estate. We find that people that kind of already have a little bit of experience with real estate are much more likely to invest than those people that have no experience and kind of just they're not out there seeking to, you know, figure out what to do with their money. So growing that business has been great. We're still new. I mean, like we our first project kicked off in 2020, like right before the pandemic, and it went swimmingly. Like we made one kind of like a big mistake. And we learned from it when it was, we bought the property with like hard money. It was 9 units. It was about $1.2 million, $1.3 million. And we went to go refinance it, and it had only been 6 months. And the new agency debt, we didn't find out till like we were well into the process that they would only finance loan to cost as opposed to loan to value. And that really limited our ability to get like really good financing. So it appraised for like 1.8 when we were done. We only got a new loan for like 1.35 or 1.4, which was a little disappointing when we could have gotten more. So needed to wait that full year before refinancing, which we would have gladly paid those, you know, extra little interest, the little extra interest for 6 more months and gotten a larger chunk back. But it was the pandemic, and we learned our lesson, and it was like kind of one of those things, like as we made the jump from residential mortgages to commercial mortgages, like we knew the residential stuff inside and out, and we still do, but we're still kind of, we're still figuring out all the ins and outs and the ways to tweak the commercial mortgages. And I think that just comes with time and doing more deals.
Sure. That's interesting. Were you able to get all of your capital that you had put in the deal back out, or were you still, you'd put more in it than you're able to get back out?
Yeah, we weren't able to get all of it back out. I think we were only able to return like 20% of our investors' money back to them on a refinance. Whereas like, had we been able to do loan to value, we'd have gotten like 60 to 70% back.
Oh man. Wow. Yeah. That's you live and learn. You live and learn.
Well, but I mean, like the cash flow is going to be fine for the next like 3 or 4 years on it. Like it's going to be a 10 or 11% instead of, you know, if we had financed the whole thing, it'd have been back down to like a 5 or 6. So, I mean, there's plus and minuses behind it. So it's not the end of the world, but it's like one of those things, like, had I known that, like just waiting another 6 months would have been a lot better.
Right. And I guess it was too late in the process to just put it on pause and wait.
Yeah. I mean, we'd spent, you know, the money for the appraisal, the phase one, all the origination fees. Like we were deep into the process.
Didn't make any sense at that point. That's interesting. When you review the last 10 to 15 years of your guys' business, what are some things you feel like you've done right that other people can emulate?
You know, probably leveraging property. You know, we started buying properties and then doing the value add and refinancing. And that refinance is really key. Like, make sure that the property is spick and span, landscape's done, outside exterior looks good. Like, when that appraiser comes, hand them all the comps that you think are worthy of being a comp. Like, some of that, like, financing stuff, like a determination on a value is so subjective from the appraiser's opinions. Like, being able to really make sure that you give them the best light possible for your property is really good. And then when you are able to bring that capital back out of a property and then go into a next one, it really, the velocity of your money, like, increases a ton. So I guess I would say that, like, being able to really figure out what sort of financing is going to be the best and making sure that you're able to follow through with it and then keep your money working as much as possible.
Yeah, I think that's interesting that you say that, because I had a property recently that I was, it's actually the office I work out of right now, did the same thing. And I was actually blown away with what the appraiser came back with. I'm like, and it was actually great. It was in my favor, very, very, very in my favor. And I'm like, what in the world? How did you come up with that? Which, I'm all good. Okay, I'm fine with that. You know, better than arguing the other way. But it is interesting how subjective it is. Cause I looked at it, I go, that's a fairly subjective.
When we were kind of first starting out, I want to say it was like our sixth or seventh property. We were trying to get financing for it and the appraisal came back at like 550. And then the loan fell through. I don't know if the banks was like, that seems too high. We went through another broker, another appraisal came in at 250, and like, it was like a significant, it was a huge difference. And so we were just blown away at how these appraisals were kind of done and like how subjective they are. We kicked that one and we went to another broker and we ended up, I think, getting somewhere in the middle, like 375 or 380 on that project. But it was just, we were just blown away by like, they can really be $200,000 or $300,000 apart, like within a couple months of each other. So,
yeah, that's crazy. That's really crazy. I think your point there of bringing comps to that appraiser, I've never heard of that. Is that?
Yeah, we always print out comps of like what we think it's close to, and then just hand them those pieces of paper. I mean, you're not supposed to have any like direct communication other than the questions that they ask. But if we have that stuff available, like, it can't hurt. Like, they can either take it or not.
Sure. I mean, a comp is a comp. You're not telling them anything. It is just simply, hey, here's some other properties and what they sold for.
Yep.
Do whatever you want with it. You can throw the trash, but just giving it to you. That's interesting. I would have thought that would kind of tend to make an appraiser frustrated or be like, yeah, I don't like you. I'm going to give you a bad appraisal.
I mean, I think everyone's like just trying to do their job and they want to get it done as quickly as possible and get on to the next one and make money, right? So you can be like, help them out with a little bit of work and they're like, yeah, sweet. Like, I might as well.
Sure. And appraisal, being an appraiser, you know, the return on time in the appraisal business has gone down significantly. I mean, in the last 20, 25 years, you know, I was talked to plenty of appraisers and they're like, golly, 25 years ago, we were doing great. Now it's twice the work for half the pay. So, you know, maybe you're not going to make them mad by helping them out a little bit. That's really cool. AJ, before we jump into the final four questions, are there any parting thoughts or, you know, last pieces of advice you'd love to share with our listeners?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's tough to get started, to make that like initial leap. If you're doing your homework correctly and it looks like it's going to be a good deal, like hitting singles and doubles when you first start out is more important than hitting a grand slam. Like you gotta get your foot in the door somewhere, and just getting there and starting out is actually the biggest grand slam that you're going to hit, is just getting that foot in the door.
That's great. I love that. Well, here we go. Final four questions. If I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
I would find a partner that knows real estate and has good credit and say, hey, let's partner on some fourplexes or something. And I'll say, I'm going to move into one of the units and then after a year move out, and then we'll have it rented out and I'll cash flow and we'll refinance it and then we'll go do it again.
Right. I love that. Question number two is this: if you'd help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
If there's one mistake that I had, it's probably not having a written contract with a contractor, just something in writing. Like there's so many different things that in verbal communication, one person can recognize something or not. So if you are having someone do work for you, make sure you have it written down as explicitly as possible, so both people are on the same page now and in the future.
Right, man, that's a lesson that sounds like it was learned the hard way. Question number three. That's not even it at all. I can't remember question number three. Investing in the world. There it is, man. I've only done this 340 times. Question number three, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
You know, every time that we go into a unit and fix it up, the quality of the unit is better off for the next person. Yeah, it might be a little bit more rent, but ultimately, like, we're improving the quality of life for a large amount of people. So I firmly believe that. I also believe that, like, the employees and people that are working with me, I am trying to help them generate as much wealth as possible. And I feel like that is a blessing too.
Oh, gosh. Absolutely. Absolutely. They're lucky to have you. Cool, man. Last question for you, AJ. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Sure. My email address is aj@uptownpm.com. I'm happy to answer any questions. You can find me on BiggerPockets. Please listen to our podcast, Westside Investors Network, WIN for short. And yeah, uptownsyndication.com, uptownproperties.com. And then we actually did start a virtual assistance business. It's called Offsite Professionals. So if you're interested in getting an offsite professional, check it out, offsiteprofessionals.com.
That's really cool. AJ, thank you so much. I do appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.